Showtime! Woo! Woo!
Another week of Weekly Wrestling Ramble, where last week you were unable to see us because technical issues, but hopefully that's sorted this week and you can still see us. As always, I'm joined by Todd.
Hello, how are we doing?
And this is the penultimate episode before the Royal Rumble. Next week we will be doing a live Rumble on the 31st, which I suppose we should do the show. We'll talk about that week in wrestling on the actual live feed.
Yeah, we'll incorporate it. And we could even, I don't know if you've mentioned another podcast, but I've certainly mentioned it here, but we're going to have Jordan from the Jibber Jobber podcast on. Well, Jibber, he is the other half to Kevin for the Jibber Jobber podcast. So okay. He's going to actually be joining us for the live stream, which is actually quite exciting because he's a
tweener where he kind of dips his toe in wrestling, but I think he likes the...
He's very green.
He likes the drama that goes on behind the scenes of wrestling, which I think we all kind of do. So we'll be doing that on the 31st of this month, Royal Rumble night. Make sure to find us. We'll be live on YouTube where we'll kind of give... And you can also find that after the fact as well, because it'll remain as an actual episode. But we're going to give our you know, go-home episode edition as we're waiting on the Royal Rumble to start. So that'll be interesting. Make sure you go and check that out. Head to www.jibberjabberpodcast.com. And also, just before we start the show, if you're thinking about having someone create you something cool, just go to fiverr.com. Now, the cool thing about Fiverr is we now have an affiliation with Fiverr. So if you go to jibberjabberpodcast.com and you click on the banner for Fiverr, if you were going to buy something from Fiverr anyway, at no extra cost to yourself, just click on our banner and shop that way, and it'll kick back something for us to kind of keep this podcast rolling. So give that a bash and make sure to like, subscribe and all that cool stuff. So let's get into the show. Todd, how has your week been in wrestling? You enjoyed it?
I felt this week was better than last week, but maybe that's just, we'll speak about it, but there was one thing this week that made me crease myself laughing like I've never laughed at in wrestling in a little while, and we'll speak about that. So for me, automatically, it's given me a moment this week that I didn't have last week. So this has been a better week in wrestling for that. There's actually when I come to think of it, there's been a lot more talking points, I feel, this week. As I say, we'll talk about it, but I feel this has been a good week in wrestling regarding talking points. So
what do you think? Well, the on-screen week has been quite cool, but the behind-the-scenes kind of stuff's been interesting as well. We've seen The Undertaker on Joe Rogan's podcast. And all that was taken away from that was...
You know.
Wrestling was soft and all this stuff, right, which has kind of been batted back and forth. Also, Ryback had a bit of a verbal sparring with Mark Henry over comments that he's made. So I'll just give you a bit of that before we kick into this week's episode.
Just before you go into it, you know a bit of stuff about Val Venis as well?
Which part are you talking about?
I heard that he'd gone missing or something like that.
What did he go missing?
He'd left Twitter in April and nobody'd had contact with him since April or something like that.
That's rubbish. He was tweeting yesterday.
Well, this is it. I heard about this. I was like, that can't be true because April was like last year. I thought I would have heard something by now. But no, I know that he's certainly in the proper... I don't want... Everybody's entitled to their opinion and things like that. I don't want to make people feel like they've got the same views as Val Venis. You know, they're the wrong views or anything like that. But he's one of these guys who at the moment is very much... everything's going on in America with Joe Biden, with his inauguration. That was all this week. This is the moment in time where that happened. And he's very much of the whole America now has a president that endorses
slavery
and all of that. And he's very much of that clientele. So
he'll be entering the Royal Rumble then?
No, there will not be. Val Venis, the guy, the wrestler who came out to a tell with a gimmick of a porn star whose name rhymes with penis, will not be in this year's Royal Rumble. That is a spoiler.
See that Peter Avalon, pretty Peter Avalon, he's proper the next incarnation of Val Venis.
We'll speak about him. We'll speak about him in
the
AEW section.
So Ryback had said he'd sent a tweet to Fox when Fox had put out... Did you see this?
No, I don't.
Fox put out a tweet saying, who is the best wrestler to never win the WWE Championship? And Ryback commented something along the lines of,
Ryback. You know,
his comment was something like, wrestling is fake, guys. No one's ever won a championship. It's a title that is there for marketing purposes, so you can't win a prop, right? And some people in the wrestling industry had a bit to say about that. Mark Henry, specifically on Busted Open Radio, was like, you know, he kind of went off on it. And, you know, Ryback, if I ever see you, you're getting slapped and your punches taste like candy and you're just jealous because you never made it. To which then Ryback was like, he was like, oh, yeah, I've got nothing but love for Mark Henry, so I'm not going to take that to heart. And then put out like 15 tweets in a row calling him a piece of shit, right, to that effect. And I kind of sat back and was like, right. And I watched a lot of Ryback stuff and I subscribed and I look forward to watching Ryback's content. And I always thought it was very positive and very cool. And I thought, right, he's a guy that I'd like to probably, if I bumped into, I'd have a lot to talk about. So I sent out a tweet just basically saying, you know, the guy's human, right? His tweet was in jest. Maybe think about that before he's all panel on him. Blocked by Ryback.
Only after he retweeted your, or liked your comment or something, was it not?
Yeah.
He liked your comment, retweeted it, blocked.
And then blocked me.
To be fair, there was a moment in time, maybe a couple of years ago, where you would have worn that with pride. I remember you used to tweet me images of like, Hulk Hogan just blocked me on Twitter. Who else was it? Hardcore Holly. Because like, I said he sandbagged it.
Yeah. Well, it's just things I'd read and then I would ask them about it just to see if there was any validity and then I'd get blocked. But I mean, at least those blocks were merited back in my younger days, right? When I was asking the questions you probably shouldn't ask, right? But to be blocked by showing someone support, right? I was like, is that right? Aye. So I went on my personal account and not the Wrestling Ramble one. And I was like, fuck you, Ryback. And I blocked him. And then I went to his YouTube and I unsubscribed. Fuck Ryback.
Yes,
fuck Ryback. You know, I love my fans. Blocked because what? I stuck up for you. Fuck off. Mark Henry was right, prick. Anyways, another news. Hey, yeah.
Jibber Jabber host buries Ryback.
Well,
Ryback doesn't know because he blocked him.
Mate, Ryback's burying himself. And you know what? See if he keeps blocking the people that are fucking supporting him. Fuck Ryback. Fuck him.
As I said in one of the previous shows, I've known people who've met him in real life and he's only ever came across as nothing but nice.
That's what I would have thought.
Stories I've heard. But to be fair, anybody can come across as nice when you're meeting them at a convention. It's it's not a true analogy of who somebody really is, but the guy's clearly a strange individual for sure. You know, but he blocked Kevin, so yeah.
Now, fuck him. I watched the David Arquette documentary on Sky. Have you watched David Arquette's documentary?
I have not watched this. I haven't even heard of this.
It's actually really good. A lot of it's kind of...
film-based.
Not, well, it's basically him getting back into wrestling. And he kind of shows you how when he won the WCW title, his career kind of went... Nobody took him seriously. He says, you know, I do like 150 interview auditions to get into movie roles and I get rejected like a month, 150 times. He's like, people don't take me seriously and I love wrestling. I want to do it properly now. So he goes back into wrestling. He gets stabbed in the neck during a match. Now here's the thing. Here's what I didn't like about it, right? Is he goes to like this trashy barn place, right? Where these fat, grotesque, out of shape fucking marks, right? Are wrestlers. And they're like, you know, fuck
they're
him.
Actually the co-wrestlers, basically. They're the actual people on the roster. Or are you talking about them as fans?
He goes to an independent, which is basically yard. Right. It's literally in a back garden, right? And they train in somebody's shed. And he goes in there and they're like, and they're getting all this. You know, now he knows what the real guy's doing, all this. It's like, you're a fat, out-of-shape, fucking, dirty, stinking bastard who probably doesn't even know how to spell bump, let alone take one. And I kind of hate how that documentary glorified them as real wrestlers.
Nah, man. No such thing. I always like to say there's no such thing as reality television. When there's a camera involved, I don't care what anybody says. Nobody is their real self in front of camera. There might be a few exceptions, but I'm sorry. Whenever I watch any sort of reality documentary, I'm like, okay, this is hyper.
Yeah.
Hyper, you know. So always remember that. The whole Tiger King thing, I always think to myself, yeah, this guy's certainly eccentric, but this is all kind of hyper.
realism. Dialed up to 12. And you know, and within that documentary, he goes to speak to Nobbs, the nasty boy, and he's trying to get booked on one of his shows. And Nobbs is like, get out here now, you're ruining the business. I'm like, that's so fake. It's so fake.
You know,
at the end, Nobbs like that, you know. It's like, fuck off.
It's like the Ramsay's Kitchen nightmares, man. Yeah. It's like.
Oh my God, I didn't realise he was here. Is that why all these cameras were here and we had to sign the release forms?
It's like, he tells them to fuck off in the restaurant shit for the first 10 minutes, but you know in the end, the restaurant's going to get turned around and they're all pals and it's a success.
And they'll all have that wee wireless fucking order machine that he brings in.
Yeah, we're getting off topic with Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. Exactly. I like that show. But the thing is, I like that show because I just like Gordon Ramsay calling. I just like hearing his insults. Oh, for fuck's sake, you fucking wet noodle.
Yeah, so
I love it. It's a total deal.
Check out the Arquette documentary. It's really cool. And Pretty Peter Avalon actually was training David Arquette.
Yeah, Pretty Peter Avalon. Up until this week, he was a librarian, right? Let's just talk about this, right? Let's just talk about fucking now, right? AEW, he was a librarian, and his gimmick was that he was a librarian with this other woman librarian. I don't know who the woman was, but they were in the AEW dark. They were like first came in, and their whole gimmick was that anybody would speak, they'd go shh, and they'd have their books and shit like that, and that's all they did. And that seems to be for that. That's it. Now he's Pretty Peter Avalon. Oh, fucking shite.
Well, I don't know. I've got notes on him, so we'll get
right
to him.
Okay.
So we'll kind of kick off with Raw here. It opens with our Rey Mysterio Orton, and so Randy Orton has a long ass promo.
Let's just talk about it, man. I seen this thing on internet, right? I seen the Randy Orton. Right, for anybody who's not seen it, if you've not seen it by now, I don't know what you've been doing. He's wearing a mask. And I see a promo, it's like when video games become reality. Do you remember in one of the SmackDown vs. Raw game, The Masked Man?
Yes.
It was like, they finally brought him into real life. This is fucking stupid, man.
The mask, because we know that when he takes the mask off, he's definitely, it's like when Kane took his mask off, and you can see he put a bit of shoe polish on his nose for one for that very day. Next week, it was gone. It was like, so you've been burnt this whole time, all the way through the 90s, but now... Now you can just rub it off.
It's like the Cody Rhodes gimmick when he was in WWE. He had the whole beautiful, my face is distorted.
It went from going, whoa, to whoa.
It was actually not the worst gimmick that Cody had at the time because they had the people with the bags in their heads and they had the potential. But this Randy Orton, I'm like, you know what? Randy Orton's at the stage where he's like, he doesn't give a fuck what he's got to do creative. He doesn't care about this.
And he actually does it really well. He always pulls it off really well.
No criticism of what he's doing. He's doing the best he can possibly can. He's certainly making this shit the best he can possibly make it. But it's quite clear that Randy Orton nowadays is like, he's not going to be the guy going, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. He'll go, fuck it, I'm getting paid, I'll do it. Fuck it.
Yeah, whatever.
When we put a mask on, some shit. Yeah.
I thought his promo was quite long. They're obviously building to the whole Bray Wyatt return to take down Orton. Oh, if he takes him down, because we don't know how that kind of goes. Yeah, I'd still like to see that match. I'd still like to see her like get RKO'd. I'd like to see that.
I'm getting fed up with this now because I'm like, see, Alexa had their match as well this week. Who is this for? Who is this Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss, Harley Quinn, Joker thing? Who's it for? Like, I'm sitting there going, me and you are in our 30s. We are way past this. The only people I can... Is there still the 15-year-old emo kid who's listening to Fall Out Boy and Blink-182 and My Chemical Romance? Is that still a thing in 2021? Emo kids, do you still exist? Because I can only... See, the people who used to love... this is not a criticism, the people who enjoy this stuff. You know, like Nightmare Before Christmas, all that. It was like a phase. Heck, it was very strong in like 2005, 2006... That time, that period, you know, it's like when we were at school. If that Joker and Harley Quinn type thing was back there, I can understand people liking that. But I'm sitting there in 2021 going, who is this for? This is not, at least to me, this is not cool. This has not got any potential. I honestly can't, but I really did like the Fiend stuff up until Goldberg killed him in Saudi Arabia. And since then, it has been... nothing but momentum lost. The John Cena thing at WrestleMania intrigued me a little bit, but it's not been built upon.
The John Cena thing was class. I loved that. It was okay.
It was good. I mean, at the time I was like, this is amazing. And, you know, it's just, where else went after that, I'm just like, nah, you know. Bray Wyatt, the guy's obviously got talent. The guy's obviously got ideas. But this thing at the minute, just fucking kill it dead. It's not working for me. I'm not interested. I used to watch Raw to see The Fiend. I used to be interested. Now I'm just like, fuck's sake. This is for me, it's just, I'm not interested. It's not my thing. If it is your thing, if you're listening to this and you think he's talking fucking shite, tell me. I'm telling fucking shite. Come and speak to me at the Royal Rumble and say, Todd, hi, listen to the podcast. You talk fucking shite and tell me why I'm talking shite. I don't think I am, but tell me why. Anyway, that's my rant over on fucking fuck The Fiend, fuck Collect. No, don't get me wrong. Don't fuck the people playing these parts. Fuck this storyline is what I'm saying. Whoever's coming up with the storyline, fuck you, shit.
I don't hate it. I don't have the same kind of feeling as you do about it, because I understand that, you know, only so much. I think it was left straight down to someone like Bray Wyatt to come up with what the subject matter is. I think it would be better. I think there's a lot of writing going on there that, I mean, obviously the characters know that, the actors know their characters. I think if it was kind of left to them, it'd probably be better, but I'm not hating it. I don't take the stance that you do on it. One thing I do love, though, is the the whole recap of Tori's dad from the 2000 era, the Ruthless Aggression era. Lacey Evans and Ric Flair are clearly going for the whole Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson's dad. Right? Can you see that? Right? Which
well, the thing is, I can't remember too much about this angle from back in the day.
Basically, what happened? Dawn Marie, Tori Wilson, quite friendly. Tori Wilson brings her dad out one time, and Dawn Marie, right? I'm gonna actually tell you this because you'll laugh, right? Dawn Marie meets Tori's dad, who looks a bit like Jerry Springer, right? Looks like her old music teacher, Mr. Finley, grey hair and all this. Now she plays the whole gold digger thing. Okay.
All right.
She goes from being one of Tori Wilson's, you know, locker room friends to being, you know, now as your stepmom. And Tori's like, no, which created a rivalry, right? To the point, right? Now, this is obviously before he passed away, because he's dead now, unfortunately, right? But back then, during an intimate scene, Dawn Marie killed Tori's dad.
Did he have a heart attack or something like that?
And dead. Right, they had a funeral for him and everything, which obviously turned into a fight. Go back and watch it, man.
Did they make the fucking tutorial for him? Oh, fuck. To be fair, if they're going to repeat a story like that, that would be like the greatest way to write off Ric Flair's character.
I know.
That would be like the ultimate way he went out.
Styling, profiling, ooh, dying. Yeah, but thing is, they could, and I would, even as silly as it is, I'd still love it, right? So they kind of go through that storyline, right? Lacey Evans is clearly after Ric Flair for his money or something, right? And Charlotte Flair obviously is like, nah, get this, there's a big rivalry. Ric Flair dies, right? Right? Not dead in real life.
Kayfabe.
Ric Flair dies, right, which leads to a match at WrestleMania for Lacey Evans, right, and Charlotte Flair. You killed my dad! Right?
Ric Flair Memorial match.
And the best of it is, right, it's during the match at WrestleMania, Flair fucking pops out the ring. Can't kill me, baby! Woo! Oh my god, that's gotta be Flair! He's back from the dead!
He comes out the ring or something, like I don't think I used to do.
A casket match between Lacey and Charlotte, and when the casket opens.
Ric Flair's in
there. Woo, woo, woo! Woo, woo. Mate, see if that happened. Oh, I'd be like, that. Stole the show. Stole the fucking show. Would that not be the best women's storyline? Because they don't play on the women's storylines. They don't get storylines like that. All the best storylines, majority, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but the majority of the storylines we like, that was class, was never really to do with women. I mean, what you had Lita with Kane, that storyline was really cool. You know, the
China and Vinny Guerrero is what I remember.
Right, but when you look back in history, the women's matches were filler. They didn't get long told stories that were just insane, you know?
There was never long, I mean, once you tell me, the only time I was ever hyped for a women's match was WrestleMania 22 when it was Mickie James and Tori, Trish Stratus, Tori. Mm-hmm.
The imposter.
Yeah, the whole thing of how it was about the fangirl that turned into the...
Yeah,
I like that. I remember that. And I, at the time, I was invested in that. I remember WrestleMania 22, I was like so fucking hyped for. I remember seeing the match card. I was like, "This is going to be the greatest WrestleMania of all time, big time, and all that."
Have you seen the memes of when? Because obviously, Ric Flair's running about with Lacey Evans on his arm, and it's like
I've not seen any of these.
Space Mountain, woo 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 woo. And just the thought of that, I thought, do you know what? That would be bloody brilliant. I would love it. And Ric Flair's now signed a contract, an on-air talent contract, so he's coming to TV.
Oh man, you know we've spoke about this. We've not spoken about the podcast, but of course, Jibber Jabber has cooperated with Monopoly Events to go and deal with Comic Cons and things like that. And of course, they do For the Love of Wrestling in Liverpool, which is in October. I don't know if Flair is on the roster for that, but I'll be honest. See now we've just because of the history we've got, I think that if one day if this podcast were ever good enough to have a, or big enough to have a wrestler on it, Ric Flair for me, probably more so than Undertaker and Shawn Michaels now, is like the ultimate. This is like the ultimate. Because we would just still be like, we wouldn't talk about his wrestling career. We would just be like, so, what's the craziest stories you can tell? Standing profile. I can't do it.
Champion, man. Woo!
Like a champ.
We would have to get him to record a wee soundbite for us. You're listening to Weekly Rebel and Ramble. Woo, 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 woo!
We don't need him to do it. He does it already for us.
Subscribing, profiling.
I swear, your impression is so good of him that when you do the impression, he stops for a moment because somewhere he's spiritually somewhere else. No. You channel Ric Flair.
Don't you call.
See that? If anybody watched, it was a face swap app on, I don't know what it was, right? I don't know if it was a Snapchat, but yeah. Kevin, for like, after we discovered he could do this impression, he sent me like pictures of a towel over his head with a Ric Flair Snapchat doing all these different household tasks. And everyone would be like, washing, like about washing powder, like a champion.
I'll need to do it again.
So funny.
If I can find them, I'll add them to the end of the
show. It's just the fact that this random towel on his head. It was unexplained, but that's what made it best.
For anybody watching, if I can find those clips, I'm going to add them to the end of the show, so that'll give me something to look forward to. Oh, God, right. So that, like I said, that would be interesting. It'd be cool to see where they're going, and I think that would be the most talked about, one of the most talked about angles on a WrestleMania card, if they could have that.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think Charlotte Flair needs to be a heel in that scenario, because they're kind of pushing that, as you can see. Has she just got one long tooth now in front of her face? Because it looks like her teeth aren't separated in any way. Like, it just looks like one big tooth she has there. She's obviously had her teeth done.
To be fair, she's had a lot more on her teeth done. I'm not criticising Charlotte. I think she's the best woman roster, but I don't know. I'm not paid that much attention, if I'm honest. But she's a talent.
She's the queen, as they say, and correctly so. I mean, she's got the blood of a champion.
If we move ahead now, there's a Kevin favourite. I remember when I like to talk on our usual segment where I try and test Kevin. One of the things that Kevin told me back in the day, pre-internet, where before internet was big like it is now, was, yeah, WWE used to have a character that used to take the piss out of Goldberg with. Yes. And it was Gilbert. And he told me about it, and I always was like, that sounds like fucking made up shit. And it's real. And Kevin, you would have been delighted to see Gilbert make his return.
Mate.
With the fire extinguishers and shit like that.
Sparklers. Which, by the way, I don't know if they were just kind of... AEW done that with Cody, right? So I don't know if... Did you see the sparklers? The wee guys with the sparklers?
Oh, man.
And they had the fire extinguisher. And he's like, ah! Do you know the best it is? See Matt Riddle, you know, you're obviously aware of the heat between Matt
and Goldberg.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, my man Goldberg, much better than Willie G. Willie G. Did you see that clip of the altercation between Goldberg and Matt?
Yes, I have.
Who do you think would win, Matt Riddle or Goldberg?
I honestly don't know. I mean, your first instinct is to say, look at Goldberg, the guy's fucking Jack, surely you can go. But then you hear the stories about how Chris Jericho got him in a hold back in the day.
Have you seen Matt Riddle's fights?
Well, the thing is, I've not seen them. But the thing is, see with legitimate shoot fights, you can just never tell. I mean, you see the big muscly guys like Goldberg and the other one I think is Batista. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're big, they're muscly, but you know, does that make them necessarily a good shoot fighter? I mean, Booker, like so, Pete, the guys who, for me, hold, and especially the wrestling business, the ones you don't fuck with are the ones who can kind of switch it like that. Undertaker is one of them. Undertaker I would not fuck with in a day of Sundays. The Godfather. I mean, the Godfather, man. The Godfather must be a friggin' absolute hard man.
JBL,
Ron Simmons. I know Matt Riddle does have the background as well. Jericho. I mean, I speak about Jericho. Jericho's one of them ones that would... Shawn Michaels is not one of them, apparently. Shawn Michaels is quite a bit of a...
As Marty Jannetty put it when I was talking to him. You know, when the Marines attacked Sean. You know, I heard it was one Marine, but
yeah.
When they all jumped him, I heard it was one.
The best story I heard about that was Jim Cornette says that Davey Boy Smith was so big that you could get the car seat in front of him to get out. He says the idea that Shawn Michaels would get beat by a Marine or the 1,000 Marines, if you believe it, and Davey Boy Smith stuck in a car in the background trying his best to get out to save him, but he can't get out to save what Jim Cornette describes as Sean's little rabbit ass.
I know, I love Jim Cornette.
He's a lovable prick.
He is. But yeah, so I think, I don't know, based on what I've seen, and I've seen Matt Riddle clean knock someone the fuck out with like one punch, right? So, and the guy had to get stuff done to his jaw. He was like, he couldn't get up.
Expect,
right? So, I don't know. I think if Matt Riddle didn't think he could take Goldberg, he wouldn't be running his mouth. But he also did run his mouth on Brock as well. And Brock went up to him and was like, I don't know your name and you'll never work with me. Stop fucking putting my name in your mouth. And I don't know, is Matt smart or stupid? But I think Brock would take him.
No, I don't. Bill Goldberg seems like a guy who's, yeah, but Brock is legit. Yeah,
exactly. So if I was Matt, I'd just be like, hey. But I thought it was hilarious that they had. And by the way, did you recognise who that guy that played McIntyre was?
Oh man, it's a guy from he's been in a lot of films, he's in things like Tens of Things I Hate You, but I noticed him most as the Santa Claus 2.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, I felt quite sad for him because I was like, oh, that's a shame, he's obviously not getting work anymore and he's got a really big belly on him.
Yeah.
But it was all right for what it is. It's kind of like a throwback segment, this was. It's like segments of the youth. It's quite clearly made on the fly because, of course, Drew McIntyre's got... They're having a big altercation this week on Raw, I believe.
Yeah.
They're having their face-off.
How good has McIntyre actually done? He's done really well bringing that rivalry back as Goldberg comes out and is like, you know, hey, you think we're all stupid? It's like, he's done really well in kind of giving it more substance.
Yeah, it's been a good test for him because he's the one that's had to carry and make this feud legitimate. I mean, to be fair, it's Goldberg versus McIntyre. That's two big names already, so that's kind of the selling point for this. It doesn't need too much work, I suppose. But even with COVID, Drew's obviously insisted on doing work for the back and making sure he's still on television every month.
I still think it would be really cool if Vince was going to go and do the whole... No one will expect Drew to just fucking flat out destroy Goldberg.
Well, we were going to talk about my Rumble prediction. Spoiler, I am going to go with the fight. I think Drew will win. I've had time to think on it, and we'll speak about the Rumble predictions, but that's going to be one of my Rumble predictions. I don't know if you had it on your list as well, but I can see it happening because I just don't like the alternative, I suppose.
Why would they build them so high just to... But then again, they've done it with The Fiend, they've done it with Kevin Owens, so...
Yeah, maybe it's just a case of, like, if Drew beats Goldberg, it's another step towards another step towards being more legit in the eyes of the common fan.
Realistically, the two main stars that have the titles are Kari and SmackDown and Raw, and that's Drew and that's Roman. So why peg them down for a guy that's not going to be there? But it has happened before, so we'll get to that. But did you see Lashley's altercation backstage with Matt Riddle?
No, I did not see this. I watched Raw like I usually do. I just watched the segments, the clips, because I'm sorry, I've not got time to put it was, 2 hours of Raw.
It was quite disappointing because they had a bit of a back and forth, and he goes, you know, you don't wear shoes. And then Lashley stamps on Matt Riddle's foot. Except he didn't stand on the foot. You clearly saw his foot was nowhere near the foot. He stamped on the ground and Matt fell, and you could see it. Like, legitimately, like, that was nowhere near your foot. And I rewound it and I was like, oh my God, they actually let this out on TV. He went like this. He literally was like this. Nowhere near his foot. And Matt's like, ah!
Wrestling's kid on.
What was that mean? a bit of a, I don't know if that was a camera angle issue that they could have covered up better, but it clearly never touched.
They can edit these shows now, man. I mean, they say it's live, but especially those segments are like, just all pre-taped, like it always has been.
So was that lazy then?
I don't know. I've not actually seen it, so I will take your word for it.
It's legitimately like really bad. Really bad.
It's just one of these things. Obviously, they were like, we don't care enough, or it's just they thought that was good enough.
I think it's. Do you know what? Lashley's becoming a bit like Scott Steiner promo, right? Like a couple of weeks before, who was he pouring milk over? And the milk was splashing all over his own suit, right? So that when the guy went away, right, Lashley's like, he's like this to the camera. Because he poured it all out himself. You know, we're going to go one-on-one with another wrestler.
What the fuck is that supposed to be?
Scott Steiner! Triple H! Triple H! I take a steroid test! Right after Triple H! That's how it's been.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I'm the phenomenon! The physical freak!
he's actually going to be for Love of Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, and I swear to God I'm getting a decent promo out of him. Triple H! Wait, I can watch Scott Steiner promos all day. They shouldn't have given the belt to Flair. They should have given it to the actual Buddy Rogers, the actual Nature Boy. I know he's dead, but they should have gave it to him. Ric Flair, man. No, Ric Flair. He hates Ric Flair, but oh. See you later. Ric Flair! Have you watched a lot of Steiner?
Steiner. I've not maybe watched as much as you, but I obviously know about that, the famous one.
If we was to go one-on-one, not wrestling, you got a 50% chance of winning.
That one is genius.
Kurt Angle knows he ain't going to beat me. He's not going to try.
It's actually a piece of genius. It's one of the greatest wrestling promos you'll ever watch.
I know. It's like, it says to him, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for you. A sacrifice. The numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster.
If anybody's listening to this who doesn't know what we're talking about, look it up. It's something else.
They say, "Oh man, I created equal." But you look at Samoa Joe. You know that statement.
I love it. So funny.
So we get a random Jeff Jarrett promo during Raw. Random as hell.
He's trying to drum up interest.
And he's like, you know, Goldberg, he's great. He's going to beat Drew McIntyre. All right, class, Jeff Jarrett. Mind that
cheers, Double J.
China, mind.
To be fair, whenever I see Jeff Jarrett, I'm just glad if he's managed to get through a segment of it singing that fucking song.
Spend my days working hard. He didn't even really sing it. That was Road Dogg.
I know, but it was just, I remember his cringy Hall of Fame and ended up singing at the end. And they obviously thought it was going to be this wonderful moment, and it was one of the most awkward things.
You think it was awkward?
Oh, man, go back and watch it. It's so
fucking cringe.
The fact
that they walked past Bruce Pritchard and didn't give him the mic was ridiculous. Mm. He made that song relevant.
He did. And that's the reason why, pretty much one reason they did it.
When I went to see Something to Wrestle live before lockdown and all this, they sang that. Spend my days working hard, and all the crowd was gone mental and singing it. That's where you need that. You know, I thought it was awesome.
it's not my thing. I think it's quite cringy, but I get it.
See, when Bruce Pritchard's doing it live and the whole audience are singing back.
I'm more open to Bruce Pritchard doing it because I understand the history behind that. But yeah, when they did it at the Hall of Fame, no for me. Was it anything else that happened in Raw this week?
Alexa Bliss bet Asuka.
Yeah.
Queen! They're clearly leading up to her taking that title. So that'll be something. She kind of, they're playing about with it. What I wonder is how they're going to do that when the audience are back. But I think they're making the most of it now where, you know, the lights go out and she's changed. I loved it. I loved the promo backstage. Asuka, what will you do if she starts using all these powers on you? I don't know. Cuts to an advert. I don't know.
I never seen that, but
they cut to an advert back and Michael Cole's like, yeah, Asuka pretty much was like, yeah, I'm scared of Alexa Bliss. I don't know.
I kind of like Asuka.
I love her because she has a feel of legitimacy. Like,
yes, wow, right? She can work.
Right, but also she's fun.
She's daft, right?
I think
the Money in the Bank match from this year, like when she was like lifting all that.
I really like Asuka. I think in wrestling now, there's a lot of copycats that are trying to be Asuka, right? And I think she is the pinnacle of what that character is. So all these wee wannabes need to go, stop trying, because you'll not be better at being Asuka than Asuka.
Yeah, be your own self. Yeah. Be the best version of you and all that.
Don't they come out with the same almost entrance and just a different name? She is, when you look at top tier talent for the women's division, Charlotte Flair and Asuka.
Yeah, they're the ones.
If someone is going to go up against Asuka, someone's going to go up against Charlotte Flair. You know, chances are you're not going to beat them.
Yeah, maybe Becky probably would. When she comes back, she's going to be hyped.
Mate,
to the body.
Do you know what? Everybody loves her, and do you know what I think she's done? She's just basically ripped off Conor McGregor's.
With a little bit of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
For the women's division.
Which obviously is working for her, so good on her. But
yeah.
Little Ronnie. I'm like, okay, next all you need to say is, you're Gail fucking nothing.
She could say it. She probably would have done it already, let's be honest.
Exactly. So I think that's the whole Becky Lynch thing, which kind of works for a while, but I think she's going to have to mix that up a bit.
Yeah.
She'll get a pop when she comes back.
Time will tell. But I think that, I honestly mean this, I think that in years to come, people will look back at the women's division and say the best from that period will be Charlotte. People not seeing it now, but seeing years to come, she'll be like John Cena is now. Everybody's looking forward to John Cena coming back for WrestleMania season. Mm. You know why? Because he's fucking good.
He is.
Always has been.
And you know, I asked my son last night, actually. He was having a bit of a bad dream or whatever. So he was like, can you come sleep in my bed? I was like, fine. I was like, I need to watch a SmackDown before my episode. And I was like, Harry, who's your favourite? He's like, is that WWE? I'm like, hi. Because like, you, he plays the games. And I'm like, who's your favourite wrestler? He's like, John Cena. He's like, da, 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 John Cena. I was like, respect. The fact my child hasn't grown up with me forcing wrestling. It's been a thing he knows I watch, but here, watch just with me. You know, I'd rather he came to me. But the fact that what he knows of wrestling is John Cena, and he gets excited. So I put a John Cena promo on, and then I put John Cena versus Jericho at Royal Rumble on for him.
Yeah.
And when Cena beat Jericho, he was like, like, I understand it now, even if I didn't before, right?
What John Cena is. You can see Austin Rock for second coming Hulk Hogan. I'm sorry, John Cena is the second coming of Hulk Hogan because he had like the same popularity as Hulk Hogan does. The thing about John Cena is that he was infinitely better than Hogan's ever been, and controversial opinion again. Cena has actually had more five-star matches than The Rock or Steve Austin.
Cena, because he sticks to his own arsenal and because he doesn't wrestle in the Tokyo Dome to five-star matches, he doesn't get his credit, but he will in about 10 years.
I think he's going to get his credit now, to be honest. I think, honestly, you've seen it at WrestleMania 35, where I've spoken about this in one of the previous episodes, Kurt Angle. Everybody, including myself, was absolutely itching for Cena to come and retire Angle.
Yeah.
And when he faced Undertaker, I think people were a little bit more disappointed we didn't get a longer match out of that. Cena is now in that period where he's an attraction, and you'll see that. He will wrestle at WrestleMania, I'm absolutely certain of that. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll be one of the matches that people look more forward to this year.
Yeah. I think that whole go away, come back thing always works. And nothing but love for Cena. The AJ Styles, his documentary went out on...
I watched that.
Did you watch it? What did you think?
I thought it was all right.
It was pretty good.
It's probably as much as they're going to do documentary-wise.
He talked about Cena and how that match was probably the match, one of the greatest matches he'd had.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of stuff from TNA and his work in Japan, and it was quite refreshing to see that. Of course, he'd worked in WWE previously, but we see he worked in WWE. I actually wasn't aware he'd worked in WCW.
I knew that he had.
So I learned a couple of things. Don't get me wrong, it's not the documentaries that they used to make, but superstars are certainly a lot better. Like, there's a lot of classic documentaries that are still on the network, like the Shawn Michaels one, the Bret Hart one.
Yeah, I think the difference is
Stone Cold Steve Austin one.
The way they view these, they're trying to make them episodic documentaries rather than a DVD purchase. That's the difference. You know,
they're okay, but the stuff that back when they used to make the DVDs and stuff like that, I mean, I used to eat those up. But yeah, it was a good documentary. It was nothing more than that. It was good. But for me, I watch these things more for the back. I really find the backstage. See, they're opening up a lot more backstage stuff now, especially with that Undertaker Last Ride documentary. That was awesome. I love seeing the backstage stuff, so I'm always watching these 24 shows and things like that.
That's pretty cool. So we move on to AEW. AEW, it's Minus One's birthday! And everybody's singing happy birthday. I understand it. I don't think it needed it.
I completely agree with you. I watched it and I was like, I was questioning myself. I was like, do I mention this on the podcast? But I think I have to. I don't want this to sound harsh. That kid understandably needs a lot of distractions right now. And that's absolutely fine. I think what they did after Brody passed, I don't know if you feel the same, was great. Nice tribute, really nice thing to do for the family. Obviously, they're going to support behind the scenes, kind of a contract. I've seen that as a way of making sure they're going to be okay financially. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting to see him cut promos and do things like that, like happened this week. And part of me was like, Todd, just, you know, let it go. It's not going to be a weekly thing, but see if this does become a weekly thing. I think we won't be alone in saying, guys, you're really...
They'll create the best heel in AEW, Minus One.
You know, it's a bit like when Braun Strowman tag teamed with Nicholas at WrestleMania. I remember how much rage I felt watching that, because I was so disappointed. I wanted somebody a surprise, and it was a fucking kid from the audience.
Beat as well.
Yeah, you don't want to be too cynical, because you think to yourself, that kid must be having the time of his life, and you don't want, as an adult, you don't want to begrudge a kid, especially somebody who just lost his dad. So that's why I'm giving it a pass. But what I will say is, this can't be a regular thing on national television on a show that's trying to establish itself as a serious contender to WWE.
Yeah, it almost felt hokey. It felt like when we used to be in that company, that independent company, and they would have someone in the audience whose mum's like, oh, it's his birthday. They would, happy birthday to, after the match. And it was like...
Yeah.
Right.
It was to get kids to come, wasn't it, you know?
I understand it from that level, but when you're AEW, no.
The difference is wrestling, right? In any other entertainment medium, you would say happy birthday to a kid, maybe give him a present and a birthday cake. But only in the wrestling medium would you say, happy birthday, kid, slap the shit out of this guy. Whack him in the head with a kendo stick.
Chop him. What I did like is the guy that came out to bash minus one was saying what everybody felt. Is this a crash or AEW?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I don't know. As you, I think you're in agreement. I think we're quite in agreement here. We don't want to be too harsh because we understand it. We're still very fresh from the loss of Brodie Lee. It's less than a month that he passed away, so I get it. But this is national television. I think it's one thing to do it in the event scenario, but to air it on national television as part of your shows, a bit questionable.
Yeah, not big on it. So, yeah. Young Bucks.
Just before we move on, Dark Order this week, though, with Hangman Page. This was the moment that made me kill myself laughing. You probably know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
He said yes.
These guys coming out like that. I just love the idea. These guys in masks coming out dancing.
I think
the Dark Order is that new. I'm all in.
Yes, yes.
It killed me. It was the fact I said yes, but it was just these guys coming in with a bunch of masks on. These guys who for weeks have been built as monsters. Yeah. All that shit. I'm suddenly coming in.
I think that's
Hangman Page.
I think that's the real money in them, right? As the jokey kind of thing, and not the whole. We're going to kill you. I think...
With John Silver leading John, them,
he should be the leader. Should be the leader. He is. And I think they're actually... I went from being like, what? To, right, it's like New Day. When New Day came about, people didn't know what they were all about. Yeah. And when New Day came into the scene, they were kind of the whole inspirational, no, you can do it and all this, right? They didn't come in as what they are now. They came in as... You know, power of positivity. You know, you can do it, right? Yeah. Self-help. Yeah. We're three guys. Oh, yeah. And they had even, like, the choir singer, you know.
It was like a very, yeah. Mm-hmm. Almost and because like a gospel
people,
type thing.
And then people started shouting, New, they suck, because they did, right? And at that point, they were like, do you know what? It's not getting over. Let's play with what they're doing. And they started to show parts of themselves. New, yeah. They rock. Yeah. And they start. That's because of that. Because of the backlash, they became what they are today, which is nothing what they started out or what the plan was for New Day. And yeah. I think this is the same. And I think the Dark Order would probably be when the audience return, the Dark Order may get a huge pop because of how over they are now. Because the way that it's like something in Natural Libre, right?
Exactly. I love the fact that they're still called the Dark Order. It sounds quite sinister and all that. And it's just a bunch of guys in lucha masks trying to get people to join their club. I'd love that if that was just their gimmick. That they're trying to recruit more members, but nobody wants to be involved.
That is the gimmick. Join the Dark Order.
I know, website. I'd love it if the whole gimmick is kind of like nobody wants to be embarrassed by joining the Dark Order because they're a bunch of shit show who just dancing into shit like that. Nobody wants to be embarrassed and then they try so hard and then finally get a member who's like, "Hey, I'll join you," and they're so shocked or something.
I think
it'd be funny.
I think Colt Cabana probably needs to leave them.
I never quite understood where they were going with that.
Well, he was always kind of, yeah, okay, I'll join the Dark Order, but I'm not really in the Dark Order, really. And I think once Brody had kind of passed away, he was like, of course, these guys are my family. And you're like, oh, of course he's part of the Dark Order. He kind of felt that. But I think he himself makes the Dark Order too legit. Which is funny because he's a joke kind of character anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But he's too legit for the Dark Order, I think.
But I think it might need that. I think.
Yeah.
But I think it might need some characters. I mean, what else would he be doing? Is my question. He would just be following it. If he wasn't in Dark Order, he would be just
Scotty Goldman,
another guy in the AEW.
Scotty Goldman is who he was in WWE.
Well, he would fall into the middle of the pack. I mean, Hangman Adam Page said no, even though they thought he was going to say yes. This is obviously still going to keep going. At first, I wasn't so sure about this, but if they're going to keep doing it, like, man, you're such a good wrestler, you got such beautiful hair. I'm like, I'm digging this. I'm digging the John Silver, and I really hope that's what happens in the Order. That's a faction that's going one way, potentially. If we're going to talk about a faction for me that really lost its stride this week, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I felt that the Inner Circle really is on its last legs now.
Do you know how I knew that Jericho and MJF were going to win straight away. And I even thought about recording myself going, they're going to win, and here's why, and sending it to you before you watched it. But I thought it'll spoil it for you. Do you know how I knew they were going to win? Because they've made an entrance theme for their tag team.
Right. That makes sense. It makes sense. It's a bit like back in the day when you used to see the posters for the pay-per-views before the actual set. I really don't think... I was never one that really bought into MJF being in the inner circle.
I never have.
I didn't get that. It's quite clear that this is all going to implode, hopefully sooner than later. The Inner Circle was actually a thing I thought was all right. I honestly thought it was, it kind of had Evolution vibes about it for me. But it's just became too much of a joke. And this match, of course, had actually a very... a lot of people are talking about it because of Jericho's line salt botch, where, it was a bit painful to watch. And a lot of people are kind of questioning if Jericho can still go. And I'm like, of course he can still go. He might just be...
Jordan actually was watching AEW for the first time.
Oh, did he? Wow.
And he goes, is that Chris Jericho? I was like, yeah. How have you got so fat?
I'm not going to criticise Jericho's weight because at the end of the day, the guy's in his 50s. I will probably look like a piece of shit when I'm in my 50s. If I look like Jericho when I'm in my 50s, I'll be doing all right.
Exactly. And he can still go, I don't know.
For me, I'm kind of like, right, okay, they're all fighting now. And at what point Jericho's bringing out the bat and stuff like that? Okay, I understand wrestling. I've seen matches where Shawn Michaels and Triple H have wrestled in triple threats and beat the shit out of each other, and their justification's been, hey, I would have done anything and all. That's part of this game. That's where we wrestle. We respect each other. We give each other the best and all that. I didn't get this with Inner Circle. I thought to myself, after this match, Inner Circle are fucked, because they're going to be like, hey, fuck you, man. You'd use your finishing move on me. You tried to do this. You know, too much water under the bridge. Sammy was, of course, the star again who stood out for me. I think he's got the most potential out of that group, other than, of course, MJF, I suppose. But MJF, the way I see it, is kind of a bit like a made guy. Now Sammy's still got that future ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, heck, Jake Hager had to step in and stop people from doing. he was like the only one that was there. I was like, hey, we're supposed to be pals here. Fucking, yeah, this is just a wrestling match.
I know, it's kind of all over the place. Do you think they believe they're hyped too much that they believe they can pull off anything?
They're all heels. They're a heel faction who are fighting within each other. Who are you supposed to, and all the babyface wrestlers who are not getting used are coming out. We talked about this last week, singing the heel song. Judas. Jericho's still a heel, is he not?
No, yeah.
And everybody's still singing the heel song, and it's like, oh. It's all very confusing, as AEW is. Really strange.
Another thing, mate, how terrible are the Young Bucks at cutting a promo? They're always like they don't know what they're talking about. Like, what? They're just shit, man. I don't know.
We're not a fan of the Bucks in here. For sure, they've got... talent, they're physically talented. I honestly believe
they're talented at gymnastics for sure.
Well, I honestly believe that with proper guidance and booked against proper people, they can have a great wrestling match. Yeah. They really can. They could be, they get a lot of Hardy Boy comparisons because I don't know if because it's a real life brothers, or, you know. But I honestly believe that they could be more than what they are, but as I say, too much creative. For their own. It's the same as Cody. Too much when you
we'll get to him. We'll get to him.
Oh, Cody, oh, man. When you book, it's the same thing with the Bucks for me. I mean, I don't have so much go away heat for them as I do Cody at the moment. But maybe that's because maybe I'm just choosing to focus on Cody more. But I totally agree with you regarding the Bucks. But I do feel they've got talent.
The promo was terrible. Still can't figure out if they're heel, babyface. What are they? I don't like how the FDR were brought in as strong tag team. They were kick-ass. They take down everybody. The Young Bucks beat them, and that's it. You don't really hear FDR now.
Just another tag team.
No rematch, just another tag team. This is like, we'll take these, thanks. Cool.
Hold them for a couple of weeks, then you get them back. Or you can have them. The whole thing about the Bucks and Omega is the whole thing when they first came in, they're like, we're maybe the top guy. We may be the vice chief executives and all that. Executive vice presidents, Triple H takes a piss at them, says that, oh, it's because EVPs makes them sound important and all that. But I think there was a lot of, when AEW started going, we need the top guys, but we are not the champions. We will let the champions be these guys. And
give us the belts.
As soon as it's got the opportunity, it's like, if enough time's passed, we can get those belts. Great. Fucking fuck.
You'll keys them all.
And it's going to be the same with Cody. You watch his space. Cody's done the whole thing. If I lose Chris Jericho at Full Gear, I will never be able to challenge for the championship again. And as soon as Chris Jericho lost that belt, I was like, well, it's no Jericho that's champion anymore. So mm-hmm.
And here's
it's only
the
a matter of time.
Right, Cody. And did you know Cody has put on 9 pounds of muscle in the last 12 weeks? Really?
At least his wife's not on the show at the minute.
Mate, his entrance theme now is that it just does not mesh. You know, it's got the someone's coming. The gates that only he can use at the top of the entrance open, and he's smoking, he comes out, and then it turns into like a rap. Right? Of course, Snoop Dogg raps his song, and then it turns into whatever the song is. It's all over the place. It doesn't mesh, doesn't feel right. But do you know what it is? I'm Cody, of course. It's